Good morning. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. This, the 21st day of February 2020. I am David Ellis. We will be with you up until 1 o'clock today. River Road is where we are situated, and let me tell you, it's as if it were Sunday morning outside there. Because of all of the traffic changes, we don't have a lot of traffic passing by us on River Road today. As you know, those traffic changes have been necessitated by the fact that the demolition work on the NIS building is now in full swing. And along with that, we also have this story here about Parliament having to move temporarily because of what is commonly referred to as what? Sick building syndrome. And this is yet another example of what so many buildings in Barbados are experiencing and what it is doing to the lives of so many people in the country. And I must say that perhaps what Barbados needs more than anything else right now is a more comprehensive report on how widespread is this issue of sick building syndrome, both within the public and private sectors. That is a major story which we are following today. One of the significant stories that I saw some days ago was that of one man charged in connection with three murders. And when we look at the whole situation, we see that bail is at the center of it all. Today, in the newspaper, this country's primary school heads put out a statement under the Association of Public Primary School Principals expressing grave concern at recent acts of violence in close proximity to several primary schools in Barbados. So yes, there was shock and horror the other day when there was that shooting down by St. Albans School. But from what the principals are telling us, the violence is far more widespread than you may think. And that doesn't surprise us, because this country is one where much is covered up before it reaches crisis level. I applaud them for actually coming forward and speaking about this issue. They say that they want security guards at all primary, nursery, and special schools. That's an additional cost. Proper enclosures for school properties, that's an additional cost. Surveillance cameras at strategic locations on school compounds, that's an additional cost. Who's going to pay for all of this? Can we really afford it? But there's more to this than meets the eye. Because even when you place all of these things there, you have to deal with what is motivating people to behave in the way that they are. That has not been identified as an issue by the school principals. But we should be aware that it is indeed a core issue. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, David.
Yes, morning.
How are you today?
I'm well, and you?
I'm pretty good, pretty good. Now, I just heard you mention, I want to do a three topic, but I know you usually be short, but because I heard you mention about the sick building syndrome, let me ask you a simple question. What happened with that sanitation building in Fort Luce? A new brand building shut up. Are we going to wait until that become a sick building because it being closed up?
Is that what causes the sick building syndrome?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm asking a question.
Usually I haven't heard people complain about sick building syndrome in buildings that are kept closed. It's usually the buildings that are used by people.
Well, I don't
because
know.
Because it is the people who have the syndrome. It is not the building.
Well, I understand the parliamentarians is going to go to another building. How often parliamentarians meet?
parliamentarians may not meet more than once or twice. There are two meetings that take place that you know about. That is meetings of the lower house and meetings of the upper house. But there are other meetings that take place in Parliament.
Now I heard over the... I just didn't even get done with this. I heard over the news that months ago that people were relocated from the Treasury building over onto the retreat building. That house, urban development and rural. Now, I yet hear yesterday in the media on the program that there are still people still on the third floor, brow or something is on the third floor of the same building. So I left a bit caught.
No, but seriously though, I mean, are we looking at the wrong issue here? Shouldn't we really be focusing on what are the factors and the conditions that are creating an environment in which we have to be moving people from building to building? What is it that we are doing wrong? Something has gone terribly wrong.
We will get to that at another time. I want to discuss that. I only talk about that because I heard you mention about the sick building. I don't read newspapers not until Sundays anymore. Now, last week, I heard you ask a simple question. And I am a bit concerned as to whether the Barbadian public are in tune of what is happening in the country historically, not modern day history, and not only like what they're doing at the gathering about the old years and such like. I heard you ask a question about whether or not if it was the right time for the former Prime Minister to speak to the public after staying away so long. You remember that question?
Yeah, but you have to tell me, having heard from him, whether you can answer the questions.
How you know that I was there?
I didn't expect that you were there, but I expected that you would have heard what he said.
Okay, but what I am gauging at this morning is to inform the public of prior prime ministers who's still away from coming to the public. Now, in 1976, after the defeat of the Democratic Labour Party, could you recall that Albert did not take up the leader of the opposition as he should, and he stood away? Now, we had Prime Minister Owen Arthur, who was defeated. And he stood, although he was a member of Parliament, he stood away from Parliament for nearly a year. You remember that? So it is nothing strange with political leaders not going to Parliament after being defeated. Then we can talk about members of Parliament.
I don't understand how you get there. This was not about somebody staying away from Parliament in the case of Mr. Stewart. Mr. Stewart didn't win a seat. So it was not a question of going to Parliament. It was just being out of the public eye.
But could there? You're going right to the point I want to get at. Now, if Seymour, the former Prime Minister, had a seat in Parliament and refused to go to Parliament, what about the man that ain't got none? Huh?
So what's your point?
What about the man that don't have any?
What is your point?
And not only that, but he gave up the leader of the opposition. Now, let me finish on this. Now, we can talk about silence in Parliament. Silence. Well, you always confused when it comes to talk. Now, silence in Parliament. We had two ministers after being, I would say, fired or removed from the ministry, sat in Parliament for over a year or two without contributing to Parliament. You can remember those two ministers?
Tell me who they were.
Don Blackman and George Payne. You forget them?
And?
Huh?
And?
No, all I'm telling you that is a point in time that ministers and prime ministers don't speak. Now, that ain't what I really call you about. I just question you pertaining to the information you was giving out.
I understand.
Good. Now, let me go on to water authority. Now, this is the subject that I want to deal with. Now, we're going to end this logically, and we're going to come to a conclusion within 3 minutes. Now, David, if you were keeping a dairy with 10 cows, and you find that you were feeding them the same amount of feed, and yet they were not producing the milk that they should have produced, what would you do with those cows?
I would get them milk to drink.
Man, don't talk for me. What you would do is get rid of them cows and get a new stock. I want to deal with
water. Is that what you would do? That would be your first point of reference.
That's what people does after the cows are not producing the adequate amount.
You know that that's not common sense.
Feeding them. You cannot.
You know that that is not common sense.
But that's common sense. No. You cannot keep the cows.
It's common sense for you.
They're not producing the milk. Anybody would tell you that.
It is common sense for you.
That is why they change the cows.
No.
That's just like layers. Anytime the layers stop producing the amount that they should produce, you get rid of them.
No.
Let me go on exactly
I will not allow you to confuse the public with that.
The confusion, everybody know that. Right. If you know about dairy just, or keeping layers, that's your fault.
Hold on. If you are having a problem with the production of milk from your cows,
mm-hmm.
your first action will be to try to find out whether you are giving them the right feed or whether there's something else that is wrong. Your first action would be to get rid of the cows.
I don't know about the cows, man.
But clearly you haven't run any dairy.
You haven't run a dairy.
You haven't even brought up any fowls.
Let me get on.
Because obviously, if you followed your line of reasoning, you'd be wasting a lot of money very easily.
I know. But listen. Let me tell you this. I am dealing with water. Well.
I hope you don't. Do you see that money that you just get there?
I hope you don't put any cows
out here because you can lose it if you follow that approach.
You're Granville know that all you talking about is money, huh? Listen. Let me get to the seriousness of water authority. Now, you know that I heard the Prime Minister mention offshore drilling with Trinidad, seeking to get more oil, although we're going down a green economy and trying to get away from fossil fuel. The point that I am saying, you know that we have oil wells in Barbados where if you go to St. Philip, you see wells on from the one another digging oil or pumping oil. How come that all of this thing that the water authority going to tell you that the water, we are not getting rainfall to go through the aquifers? Now, if the water is to go through the aquifers, would not the water have to pass through the earth first to get into the aquifers? Yes or no?
What is your concern here?
My concern is, I would like to know from water authority when last they dig a well to replenish the water, because I am one of those who believe that water don't got to be able to control the aquifers. I made the logic before. I tell you, we dig oil from underground, we dig water from underground, we dig natural gas from underground, but the only thing that want to rainfall in order to get water is rain. You don't want to oil fall nor natural gas fall. The point that I am making this morning, if you are putting down so many houses on the acreage of land in Barbados, how the water is going to get down to the aquifers? I just heard about 70-something houses going to build in St. Philip. Where the water is going to penetrate after it falls to get into the earth? Could you tell me?
I can't tell you.
Good. But that's a logical point. Okay. And I want, you tell me you're always confusing people, but I want to draw back to you that all the sugar factories that we had in this country that was run by steam engines had their own well. And the only sugar factory in Barbados, the recently built sugar factory in Barbados that don't have their own well, is Portville. And the Portville received their water from Old Porter's factory well. Tell Water Authority that the same way that the government could go into offshore drilling, start digging some wells or reopening the factory wells and let the people in Barbados get water and stop fooling the people. That's all they have to say.
Have a good day. Down to brass tacks. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis. How are you?
I'm well, and you?
Very well, thank you.
This sounds like Mr. MacDonald.
You're very, your ears are very quick, Mr. Ellis.
I know your voice very well.
Yes. Mr. Ellis, I was listening, as I always do, to your show with entertainment. I just wanted to call on the last caller's comments. There are two things. There are two threads from that caller which I would want to talk about. One is the immediate thing, which is the offshore comment. Government, unfortunately, well, not unfortunately, government, the offshore platform and the offshore sector is going to be driven by the private sector. So government is not going to be spending any money. As a matter of fact, Barbadians will be earning revenues from that sector. So it's not a cost to the government to explore. That's all done by private sector interests, which the government, obviously, as you've just seen, has just signed up a deal with BHP Billiton for the first two blocks, which we're very hopeful, 40 and 140 kilometers offshore of this island in very deep water. But given the fact that the finds recently across the Caribbean, we're hopeful that those two will share a benefit.
Can you, for the benefit of the public, explain in what capacity you're speaking?
Well, to be quite honest, I was just calling on what the gentleman had said, but I did not really call as the chairman of the BNOCL or the BNPCL. I called as in my private capacity, but I do have a little bit more interest in that offshore sector than I suspect maybe more persons would do, or maybe knowledge. But I didn't really call to speak about that. But I just heard it, and I didn't want him to think the government was going to be spending resources in that sector, especially in an area where resources are very constrained.
He just made this offhand comment about pursuing oil and gas in the way that you have articulated it, while at the same time dealing with the whole question of clean energy. And I suppose there are those who are looking at these two ends of the spectrum. For some people, there seems to be some conflict. Explain to them why there is no conflict.
Well, the Prime Minister and the Minister of Energy, the Prime Minister of Barbados and the Minister of Energy, Mr. Honorable Wilfred Abrams, have articulated the government's policy very clearly, which is that onshore of the island, we will be 100% renewable energy by 2030, which is sun, wind, and any other type of renewable energy that we can have. That policy is very clear. The other part of the policy which says is that as Barbados is blessed, as few other Caribbean countries are and few other countries in the world are, with natural resources in the form of oil and gas, and offshore oil and offshore gas, that we should use those resources to fund our own development while the world's target is about by 2050 to be off of fossil fuels. That energy drive will not lessen because we have gone 100% by 2030. So we do have a 20-year window in which we can supply that need. But having said that, the Barbados National Oil Company Group is also pursuing and diversifying into the renewable energy field. As you would have heard recently, our ambition is to put about maybe 30,000 solar panels on 30,000 homes and businesses with solar panels. We're also investing in wind energy and also solar energy. Obviously, we're taking a look to biofuels. So to turn the company from the National Oil Company into the National Energy Company is the mandate that we've been given, and the company is going ahead with that fully to start to jumpstart our ambitions into the renewable energy field. So there's no real conflict. It's just really a matter of how the government uses the patrimony that we've been blessed with to fund its own development and its own development in a sustainable way.
Okay, so if you're making this transition to the National Energy Company,
Oh. I'm not saying that's the name. I'm saying that the focus will be on an energy company.
Fair enough. But does that imply, therefore, that there's got to be some internal reorganization as well?
No. The fact is that we will continue. We will continue to prospect for oil onshore and natural gas. The company will remain doing what it is doing. As we go into the energy, the renewable energy focus, obviously it will mean that people will have a chance to come into the company with that focus, and the persons who are in the company now can also transition into that energy spectrum, as we have the staff there who are very skilled anyway, who can transition and make that transition into the sector. So the ambition is that we will be transitioning, but we should do so in a manner that represents growth rather than the usual contraction when companies go through these schisms.
You've got a combination of different companies. You got BNTCL, you got MPC, you got the holding company. Is it envisaged that there will be any amalgamation of these, any or all of these, at any stage?
NPC currently does not fall under my remit. And for a while, we have been having very good discussions with the NPC board and so on, with a view to a functional cooperation. That speaks to a way that trying to manage similar resources. So in areas that we can cooperatively share those resources, we are. This, again, too, speaks to the government's mandate to drive efficiency, but without causing damage to the human resource capital that we have.
Okay. Something that is more directly related to your own operations, there's someone who's taken this opportunity to put this question to you. They want to know where they can collect their claim form what they might have lost in the laundry fire, your own personal business. They say that they've been to Warren's, but no one is ever there to give out the claim forms, and they want some advice as to where they can go, what they can do.
If you can take the person's name,
okay,
I will call in there and sort that out, because
all right,
that process is now on.
All right. Thank you very much for calling, Alex McDonald. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Good morning, David.
Yes, good morning, Glenn.
Good morning, it's Glenn. How are you doing, sir?
I'm well, and you?
I'm pretty good. I'm good, too.
Mm-hmm.
So many interesting topics you brought this morning in your preamble, especially the one I thought to dealing with Parliament, the conditions of Parliament that necessitated the transition, the temporary
removal
to Res Life building. And MP Brown from Philip North had complained about the effects it was having on her as an individual for some time. And, I'm glad to see that action as quickly as it is. Not only for Parliament, but for the public and for the general conditions. But I think we have to find a way to be able to systematically monitor, examine these buildings, have somebody reporting, someone who knows what they're doing, reporting on any condition that might be triggering these effects on people. Because it seems to be, from what I understand, there's sick building syndrome, and then there's sick buildings. Sick building syndrome, for what I recall, what I researched, it had to do with people who react to certain conditions in a building, making it by that you cannot detect and determine any particular reason why it's having this effect on them. But nevertheless, they're still complaining. They're even exhibiting certain symptoms of not being well, and that seems to have some psychological effect, and it becomes, that's what they call it. Say sometimes that begins to spread for almost a person psychologically, and people complain about it, and that is different from a sick building, where you examine and you find actual conditions. Physical, biological, chemical, whatever conditions that are triggering certain reactions in people, and therefore make it impossible for them to, to live and work and, you know, function in it properly. But I think we have to find a way. I don't know if it's coming. Maybe it's all part of climate change. Maybe it's part of what's happening in the world and the effects it's having these kind of, build up effects on buildings and therefore people. Well, maybe we need to see that as a separate area of examination.
I want to suggest to you that that may be part of it, but it seems to me that a big issue is air conditioning in many of these buildings and a combination of air conditioning and carpeting. And it appears as though if you have that combination, then you have to spend a fair amount of money trying to make sure that carpets are clean to a particular standard. It also means...
Oh, better yet, don't use carpeting.
Well, that's an option. But if you use it, then you are going to have to clean it to a particular standard. In addition to that, the air conditioning needs to be serviced on a regular basis.
Air conditioning and the filters and all that goes with it.
You see, there was a time when we relied more on having the wind flow right through our buildings.
Yeah.
But we have moved away from that. There's another dimension to all of this air conditioning as well. I was reading some stuff about the viruses.
Allergies.
The various viruses that have recently emerged with MERS and SARS and Corona and all of that. And one piece of information that I got was that they were projecting that in China, in Wuhan, by May, there was going to be a reduction because it would be less cold.
Yeah,
they have also linked the flu virus to November and December when it is cold in,
in the north.
Okay?
Right.
Now, when people come into our environment with the cold, with the flu, where do you end up? You end up in air-conditioned rooms. And those air-conditioned rooms are having the same effect as if you were in a northern climate.
So that is why,
for instance, the day that I came in here, I spent the entire day doing the entire shift doing brass tacks. By the time it was finished, I was no use to myself because the air conditioning helps to create the climate for it. And we have to ask serious questions. I mean, it's convenient to be in air conditioning, but there are pros and cons associated with the development that has taken place.
Yep, you're very right. And that is why the people before there was air conditioning, people had their problems, but the health issues were different in Barbados because of the natural flow of air through houses and buildings, and there was not this reliance. Either it was not wrong or most people couldn't afford it. And it is something that I remember in my own personal case, I had carpeting in my house until I discovered that the dust mites and all kind of stuff were accumulating, and the doctor told me you should take everything out, and I took everything out and never had any problems. In offices, it's hard to clean them, but you would have to deep clean them, as they call them, and steam clean them probably every week, because the dust and mites are always accumulating. Issues are always, so the best thing is not to have them at all wherever possible.
So where is the advice from the experts that we are supposed to have? Why is it that so many buildings in the country have been equipped and outfitted in this particular way with little or no caution, absolutely no advice to the people, and there are people in the construction industry at various levels, from architects right through and engineers, who are earning money out of this kind of exercise, but we are getting no proper advice on how to deal with it.
Yeah. You know, one of my favorite buildings in Barbados, government headquarters, where I spent some time, is that there's a natural, that was designed by Captain Tomlin, and have a natural flow of air. You only really need AC there to keep out dust and noise. But there's generally a flow of air that kept... I've never heard of a walkout at government headquarters yet because of sick building syndrome. I suspect the same thing was with the old fire service building, which was built in a similar format, similar flow of air. So we may be needing to go back to appropriate technology, which is opening windows, jalousies, and you know, Bermuda windows and doors, and let the air flow wherever possible, and even cut down further. But at the same time, do some scientific study. Maybe that's an area of study that some of the University of West Indies can take on. Or some of the personal
yes. I agree with you. What would be useful is to have more of a definitive study on what is happening here and what are the factors that are responsible for it, so that you can guide everybody, the government yep. and the private sector, as to what is best practice.
Yeah.
Instead of having a situation here, look, there are people working in companies today who are going through all sorts of problems and they are afraid to speak. First of all, the companies put them through all types of hoops. They have to do this, they have to do that. Can you be sure it's not your home? It's not this, it's not that?
Yeah.
And in addition to all of this, they are just afraid that if they raise the issue, in some way they are going to be penalized for raising it.
But in addition to that, I found from my experience with persons who complain about conditions that they're building, that the landlords who are responsible for maintenance are very tardy and reluctant, and you have to struggle with them. You get partial cleaning. There's not the importance given to it and the urgency given to it and the seriousness given, because you have all kind of allergies to deal with from various things. Some of the most trivial things to you or me would trigger a major allergy reaction in another person. But there's not that. I don't think the landlords, in the same way that seek to collect their rents and whatnot, They don't seek to service the general conditions of the buildings in the way they should. I think there's a lack of preferentialism in that area that needs to be.
Yeah.
Right. And people who rent should put pressure on them to get what they're paying for.
Well, the issue here is this. Last December, says this story, St. Philip North Member of Parliament Dr. Sonia Brown blamed her absence from the House partly due to the environment there. The chairman of committees, a medical doctor, had been away from her seat for about 6 weeks. I want people who have been complaining about their buildings to tell us how long they have been complaining. This, by the standard that I know, this is a quick move by the government to deal with this problem in Parliament buildings. But there are people across the spectrum in Barbados today who have been complaining about this. People have spoken to me about having to go to the doctor and get all sorts of information to prove conclusively that it is the environment that is causing the problem, and yet nothing has been done about it.
That's what I meant. That's why we hinted at when I said I noticed how quickly they respond to get to be relocated and for the operational continuity.
And they must be complimented for doing that. They must be complimented for doing that. You know that people complain bitterly about the old, the new court building?
Still?
No, I haven't heard recent ones.
Okay.
But that was one of the places that they complained about. You know, and that is just a manifestation of the magnitude of this problem. It is not the old buildings alone.
That's right, yeah.
Relatively right. New buildings are manifesting the problem.
So it has to be something that is common to all. It has to be an extensive determining factor. So many people are suffering from the same kind of situation.
And we do not, and we are not able to trace exactly what are the health consequences that these people ultimately suffer as a result of it.
That's right. You
okay.
know, it is serious. It is very serious, and I think we need to pay more far more attention to it than before.
I really think so. Thank All you right. very much for calling. Down to Brass Sacks. Hello?
Hello, good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes,
I want
sir.
To weigh in on this stick building syndrome. I am not going to say where my information is coming from because of where I am. I don't want to advertise for myself. But I will say this. It is not as simple as we think it is. It is very complicated. The U.S. Congress commissioned a report on new and new buildings and old buildings that are sick. And some of the information coming out of the report is this. When a building is new, we should not move into it right away. But the challenge that you would have with that is that you might, your building that you are in might be falling down and you need to get into this new building. Then you bring in the furniture from the manufacturer, which is manufactured with whatever chemicals, shrink wrap, put in the box, ship to location, and you open it inside the building right away, which is been recommended that you don't do. It should actually sit outside under a tent for at least 2 weeks. So you have moving into the building too quickly. You have bringing in new furniture and equipment that off-gassing from their manufacturing because they weren't allowed to sit out and to breathe. And then you have other people coming in then with viruses and this kind of stuff. But the challenge is that it is, why is it complicated? It's because the research is proving, even in London right now, that the vehicles that we are driving contributing to it. We don't have enough trees to handle the amount of exhaust coming out of these vehicles. The buildings are so close, you cannot have them open because when those fumes get into the buildings, then they pose a further problem. And as someone won a case in London suing the government for the fact that their kid caught asthma and died from all of this pollution in London. So it's not a straightforward, easy fix.
Agreed.
But
so recognizing that, how would you suggest that Barbados should try to get a better appreciation and understanding of what is happening here?
Right. Well, the information is available. Like I said, we need to use the information that's already available, like the research that's been done in London. The information is there. And not also not to go with myths. Okay, for instance, the whole carpet theory. That is true to a certain extent. Modern-day carpets are made with fibers that do not allow dust mites to adhere to the surface. The challenge with this is, in workplaces and at homes, when you walk on carpeting, you don't feel any dirt. You feel the carpet. So you automatically go, like, oh, it don't need cleaning. A carpet surface needs just as much cleaning as a tile surface. Remember that all surfaces. So even if you take out the carpet, but people still have upholstered furniture and drapes. We have beds. All these things require cleaning. The older folks would take the mattress and put it out in the sun. We don't do none of that stuff because we are too busy. We don't want to allow sun to come into our house because they're going to fade the furniture and they're going to fade this and they're going to fade that. So our behavior is what is partially putting us in this condition.
Which suggests, therefore, that there is a need for more information to members of the public about do's and don'ts.
Yeah.
And that's missing. Now, you say to me, you need to get more information. Is there a specific site that you can go to and find this information, or you got to go and search all over the place for it yourself? The technical quality on your phone call is deteriorated.
Can you Google air quality and stuff? Yeah, because I'm driving, I'm on Bluetooth.
Mm.
Yes, when you Google for air quality and the kind of research there, you see all this stuff is available. It would do a little bit of digging, but it's available. Like now, I said, some of it is available that we don't even have to pay for it. It's studies that have already been done by governments around the world.
But who are the people who specialize in this area here in Barbados?
There are a few companies here, one or two companies that do testing for like mold and that kind of stuff. They would have some information. But it is a combination of things that we are experiencing. We have increased our vehicles on the road. We have increased diesel vehicles because at one point in time, we were being told that there was clean diesel, which has been proven not to be true because Volkswagen was sued over it.
Well, I was just the other day wondering why it is that the government of Barbados would bring diesel vehicles into the country. I think they said that some of the SSA vehicles that they just brought were diesel. I thought I heard that. And I would think that the government of Barbados should set the lead in terms of trying to make sure that we move away from diesel vehicles in the country.
Right, because the only thing that we have to do is the cost show the cost analysis of switching to either hydrogen fuel cell or a combination of hydrogen fuel cell and electric. Yes, electric is kind of expensive now, but the price is coming down because more players are in the market, which will drive down the cost. But we also have to look at our country of itself and our unique characteristics that we can use to our advantage to slow this down and to push it back.
How widespread is the problem from where you sit in Barbados?
It's widespread, but the challenge is this. If you have someone in the office, let's say you have 10 people working in the office, one person is complaining because they have immediate symptoms from whatever is going on. They might also have a combination of symptoms from their living arrangement, which mesh with the work arrangement. And people say, oh, but she gained trouble because nobody else is complaining. But their bodies might function a different way. They might not complain, but they might go home and die. So you see, people believe that some people are giving trouble at work or whatever, because they're complaining because they want this or that, but it might not be so.
And this is where organizations like the trade union movement have to be far more vigilant on behalf of their members. They need to move in there a little bit more aggressively to get a better understanding and appreciation of what is happening to the health of workers.
There are things that you improve the quality of the thing in the building. There are certain types of plants. There's equipment that you can bring into the building, which is additional cost. But because of the fact of the matter is, in Barbados, there's no place for us to really put our buildings that we need in the middle of a natural park, so where you can have the windows open, and so there's no noise from trucks passing by and stuff like that. So, the building is closed up and AC. This is a function of, our development that we have not addressed properly.
Let me put another dimension to this. And look, there are some things I don't believe that the government must take responsibility for everything. But I want to suggest to you that on this particular matter, we have health and safety legislation in the country. There's got to be a ministry that is concerned with this particular area. And I want to say to you that I'm not hearing enough from that particular ministry about trying to raise awareness, trying to get people to better appreciate the kind of safety measures that need to be taken. There is absolutely, to me, it comes across as though there is silence from the relevant ministry on this particular matter. Now, I don't know to what extent that may be driven by the fact that the government itself may be seen as a violator. But I really think that together, I don't know if this is an issue for social partnership or what, but together we need to improve the flow of information and the understanding and the research that is related to this, because at the end of the day, it is impacting on what? Productivity. National productivity is suffering.
And that is the connection that we have to make, because the truth of the matter is we have to understand that a healthy workforce means less downtime, more production. And also, we would save on our health bill. A lot of these things that need to be done can relate back to the country being able to either keep more money or even make more money by us. So the measures that need to be implemented must not be seen as this big cost, but it must be seen as this is that we're saving money down the road.
Yeah.
I met with someone recently, and in interviewing them to see whether or not my services would really mesh with them, they said, we have people here that are asthmatic as well. And one of my questions to them was, do you have a nebulizer in the building? And they said, no. I said, you should look at getting a nebulizer. If you have someone who is asthmatic, this is one of the tools that could help. So you should have it, on the premises for your staff. There's certain little things that we can do that will save money for the company and save the staff.
What's your specialty?
My specialty is I supply equipment to deal with the air quality in our building.
Okay. All right.
But I also give that is appropriate along with that, because oil is not technical. Like I said, plants and stuff like that can be introduced to go alongside the equipment. This is also the new research coming out showing that equipment alone will not do it, and that we need to introduce a lot of the right kind of plants that will take care of, also assist with taking care of the air quality in the building.
All right, sir. Thank you very much for sharing your information with us. This is Down to Brass Tacks.